the DAL File, the ultimate Cowboys podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
All right, we are going down to Big D, where we are talking to Michael Sizemore of SB Nation's Blogging the Boys. You can get a hold of him at Twitter on Mr. Sizemore. That's S-I-S-E-M-O-R-E. How's it going, Michael?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing okay. And so are the Dallas Cowboys, who, by the way, got a really good flash of what they were hoping for with Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott. Prescott, 248 yards, a touchdown, no sacks, only five incompletions. And Ezekiel Elliott looked absolutely every bit of the kind of runner they hoped for when they drafted him. 30 carries, 140 yards on the ground. Didn't get into the end zone, but I think you can say he did his job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that's exactly what the Cowboys' offensive plan, what they wanted when they were going into the season, is they wanted to run Ezekiel Elliott. I think I was sitting there watching the game with fellow friends, and they're like, do you think they're running him too much? I was like, running him too much? Come on, this is their new prized running back. They're going to run him as much as they see fit. 30 carries, 140 yards. He had a big night, that hurdle that he did, showing off some of his athletic ability. Yeah, he didn't get into the end zone, but you know, Dak got into the end zone, Lance Dunbar got into the end zone, and also Alfred Morris. And the Cowboys have seven rushing touchdowns in only three games. So I think they're doing what they can on the ground.
I think you're right. When they picked up Elliott, the bell cow running back is something that's starting to go away in the NFL, and maybe for good reason, given the wear and tear. But the truth is that they drafted Ezekiel Elliott to be that kind of running back. So the fact that they got that this time has to be very, very exciting. Now, one concern with it, of course, Dez Bryant now awaiting an MRI. They don't necessarily know if it's all that serious yet. He had 40 yards and a touchdown. It's been kind of hit and miss with him and Dak Prescott hooking up over the first couple weeks. But obviously, any significant injury to Dez Bryant changes the calculus for the Cowboys rather dramatically.
Oh, absolutely. But I think, you know, you got to feel a little bit confident seeing him go back in the game last night. Usually, if it's something, if it's going to be something really big, you don't see the player go back in the game. The coaches are trying to be a little bit more precautious with those types of things. What I'm kind of hearing, the whispers, is that it could be like a low-grade MRI or MCL sprain, which basically you can play through those things. It's just about being comfortable wearing that brace on your knee. It's something that will go away and will not necessarily go away, but it will definitely the pain and stuff will subside in a few weeks. But you saw Dez Bryant came back out there, played the game, the rest of the game. He had a really nice block on one of their offensive drives, and he also got into the end zone. He was Dak Prescott's first touchdown pass. I mean, I guess if you're going to throw your first touchdown pass of your career, why not 88?
That's not a bad choice. The other guy's been catching a lot of passes. Cole Beasley, who has really burst onto the scene. And we've seen him from time to time before, but he seems to have an outstanding rapport with Prescott, especially on those underneath routes. Now that you have the ability to have Beasley and Dez Bryant, if and when he's available, even if he's a little slower, Terrence Williams also got the deep ball going a little bit yesterday. How comfortable is Prescott and his wide receiver starting to get together?
I think you're starting to see them gel. You're starting to see them get more comfortable with each other. You know, Terrence Williams, he had a great game. It's unfortunate that he fumbled there because they could have easily put 40 points on the Bears, I believe, and I think you probably would agree with me. But Cole Beasley, and he's on record right now to have over 100 catches and 1,000 yards, and that's just kind of crazy when you look at him because he's kind of like made in that Julian Edelman, Wes Welker type of player, but he's very small, but he's very, very quick, and he's very deceptive in his route running. And he went to SMU where basically June Jones told him, just get open. I don't care what routes you run, just get open. And he's turned into a really good route runner for Dak Prescott. He's always right there when Dak's looking for him. The third down conversions that the Cowboys are nearing 60% on third downs has a lot to do with Cole Beasley there. And then, of course, Dez is your monster weapon on the outside who you can move into the slot whenever you feel necessary. But I think he's got a good bevy of receivers. I think it's just going to take a little more time for them to keep building towards that. And then you talk about the tight ends that they have, like Jason Witten and Jeff Swaim and stuff. They're doing a really good job there, and I think they're just scratching the surface of their abilities.
When you look at this game, and I take nothing away from the Cowboys, but I would argue the Chicago Bears might be the worst team in football right now. But they managed to still get decent passing numbers, 317 yards and two touchdowns from Brian Hoyer. But the Bears only put 17 points on the board. This was kind of a bend but don't break performance by the Dallas D in a lot of ways, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that's actually what the Dallas defense is. I mean, they a couple years ago, they coined this term the WeFence, is what they called themselves in 2014. And I think that they look at the success that they had in 2014. They see that, you know, the sack numbers weren't there, but the turnover numbers were, and they were able to, you know, get plays made whenever they needed to make those plays. And I think right now you got Orlando Scandrick missed the game last night. He's dealing with two sore hamstrings. You got DeMarcus Lawrence, who's still out one more game on his suspension for PEDs, and then he'll be coming back to the lineup. I think this is a defense that has that mentality. You know, they will bend, and they will bend a lot. But I think, you know, they still dominated the Bears. I think that the score is not really, you know, indicative of what kind of game we saw last night. We saw a game that was absolutely dominating on both sides of the ball, and then they made the Bears one-dimensional. And when they made the Bears one-dimensional, they took away that ground game, because you saw there were two nice runs. Jeremy Langford had one of 30-something yards. Then you also had Jordan Howard had one of 20-something yards. But other than that, you look at it, they had like five carries for 8 yards for Langford and like 7 yards on four carries for Howard. So they really did a good job of making them one-dimensional yesterday. And I think that's what they're looking to do as a defense. They know that they're not going to be perfect, but you look at the pieces that they have. You know, Sean Lee, that's a good piece to have. Byron Jones as a safety, that's a good piece to have. You know, you got Morris Claiborne, who's playing up to the level that people thought he could play when they drafted him sixth overall. You got some good pieces, but you just don't have all of it together. But if you play that bend, don't break defense in the NFL and you can make it work for yourself, and that they're obviously doing that right now, then you got to give your hats off to them.
Dak Prescott, of course, has been the talk of the town really ever since he's taken over. 2-1 now filling in for Tony Romo, which is a pretty big deal because, well, last season without Tony Romo, the Cowboys went 1-11. So, yeah, you could talk about the Bears not being all that good, but the Cowboys lost to some pretty bad teams without Romo before. Prescott, of course, is so enticing with his physical ability. Even though he's a little bit raw, he doesn't look like he's overwhelmed by the moment. How intense is the notion in Dallas that Tony Romo need never be the starter again?
Well, I think it's kind of like a split decision here. I think you look at, I think this is, let me first say that I think this is the best problem you could possibly have in the NFL. The Packers had it a few years ago with Favre and Rodgers. But you have Tony Romo, who, you know, this, I had somebody put it pretty plainly to me, and I thought it made a lot of sense. With Dak Prescott, this offense is humming. But with Tony Romo, it's complete. With Tony Romo, he knows everybody inside out. He's had more years of experience, and he could do some really great things. I think he could do some really great things for their running game, because he makes people have to defend him. He makes people have to drop back in coverage and things of that nature that they don't necessarily do with Dak right now, because they don't know who Dak is. But Dak Prescott, I think you would have to you ask the coaches around Dallas, you talk to these guys, and they all tell you the same thing. None of them had any idea that he was going to develop this quickly and be this good. I'm sure Philly is dealing with the same thing with Carson Wentz. He just doesn't make a lot of mistakes, and he has the right reads, and he just seems like he's wise beyond his years in the NFL. And he takes chances, but they're good chances. And I just think that that makes fans want to see more of him. They want to see more of Dak Prescott. But I still think at this point in time, if you're going to that game later on 2 weeks from now against Cincinnati, or you're going into a game against Green Bay, or you're going to play the Pittsburgh Steelers this year like they are, all of which you're playing on the road, I still think that Tony Romo gives you the best chance to win those games. Not taking anything away from Dak Prescott, but Tony Romo is still the man in Dallas until proven otherwise.
To their part, both Jerry Jones and Jason Garrett have basically said the same thing, that this is still Tony Romo's team, and Dak Prescott has too. But you're right when you talk about Prescott's taking chances, but wise chances. He's now thrown 99 passes, not an interception in his career. Carson Wentz at 102 in the same division, of course, in Philly, starting off in much the same way. But this isn't all that far from the record. Tom Brady's record's 162 attempts before throwing an interception in his career. So Prescott is taking the right chances. But it seems to me that what's interesting about the Romo situation is, and I agree with everything you said. I think maybe Prescott's the guy of the future, but you know what you have with Romo. And this offense has gotten better each game offensively. They've gone from 19 points to 27 points to 31 points. And in Romo's case, how many times have we seen him rush back from injury because the guys who have filled in for him over the years have been disasters? Now it feels that they could actually take the time for Romo to get completely healthy, and maybe these re-injuries don't happen. Romo gets an injury-prone reputation, but as how many times has he come back because he could just handle the pain, not because he was healthy?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head right there, and I think that's what they look at. You see, last week they asked Jerry the question, does this – you know, they ask him the same question every week about Dak Prescott versus Tony Romo, and last week Jerry Jones said – you know, we're still can't wait for Romo to come back and things of that nature. And then this week they asked him the same question. They said, well, does the fact that Dak is playing so well kind of give you a little bit of pause and let you say to yourself, you know, we don't have to rush our Pro Bowl quarterback back? And he said, yes, he finally actually admitted yes. And I think that's true. I think Dak Prescott's playing well enough that you don't have to take Tony Romo. They said it's a 6-week injury. Everyone around the Cowboys complex say it's about 6 weeks. Well, when I look at things like that, I think of Tony being 36 years old, and I say 8 weeks. I add 2 more weeks onto that on anything. Just like I did last year, whenever he got the collarbone and they said it was 8 weeks, I said, let's keep him out for 10, but they kept him out for 8 and they rushed him back because they were losing so much. Now they don't have to do that. Now, I mean, I think Romo probably sees a lot of this and he wants to get back as soon as possible. Of course he does. He's a competitor. But you look at it with Dak Prescott, I think you're in a good position here, especially if you string together some wins, some unlikely wins against a team like Cincinnati or something like that, that you're not supposed to win and you have a pretty decent record going in, then maybe you keep Romo out the 8 to 9 weeks timetable and then bring him back when he's really fully healthy and ready to roll.
Well, going forward, of course, now they have an interesting part of their schedule. You have the chance for that offense to get even better against a 49ers team that's really problematic right now. And already, after a pretty poor performance now, there's rustles that Colin Kaepernick may return to the starting position. So that looms as a very promising game for the Cowboys. But then after that, boy, it gets interesting. Bengals, perennial playoff team. The Packers, potential Super Bowl contender. Now the in-division Eagles, 3-0 with their own hotshot rookie quarterback in Carson Wentz. When you take a look at these games taken as a group, how do you think the Cowboys need to play through this next 4 games?
Oh, I mean, you have to – if your offense continuously gets better, I mean, that's the best hope that you have because – like we said, your defense is a bend-don't-break defense. But you know Philly, they're rolling. They're the number one defense in the league right now. You also got Green Bay. I think you have a good shot against them because they don't play ultimately well on either side of the ball. They had a great game yesterday against Detroit, but that's, you know, Detroit was missing Ziggy Ansah and a couple other players that they didn't have to go up against the Aaron Rodgers. But we saw what Minnesota did. They kind of roughed up that offensive line. The offensive line of Green Bay is still a question mark. You look at Cincinnati. Cincinnati is kind of struggling, but I still look at them as a playoff team. I think there's going to be at least two teams out of that division going to the playoffs, being the Steelers and probably the Bengals. But the Bengals, I think that's a tough defense that you're going to have to face. That's going to be the toughest defense Dak's going to have had to face so far. And then you also look at turning around in the 2 weeks after that and playing Philly. It's going to be tough. So you like to see them keep on improving and keep getting their offensive going because they can score relatively if they continue with the progression they have. They can score with anyone in the league, but it's about scoring and controlling the clock like they like to do and keeping the ball away from the opposing offense and taking away some of their defensive players by putting your offense against that and using your big offensive line to take away some of their pass rush. They got a lot of work ahead of them.
Well, it is all systems go, though, so far in Big D. And Michael Sizemore is on top of it from Blogging the Boys, SB Nation. And you can find him on Twitter at Mr. Sizemore. Love to check in with you in about a month. This is a fun team to follow.
Oh, yeah, it certainly is. And, we'll definitely check in again and see where they are in the next 4 games.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today. And we will be back on the other side when we have the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames. And then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona. And you can always talk about that going from the quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald and that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really. The Houston Texans off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett in his very first start showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. We all have this well-founded confidence in New England that any time they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. And it's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at Blount. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. Almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you know Tom Brady. We're going to spot you know Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. The low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble, because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully, because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now, he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, Now it's in Buffalo, and you know the fans in Buffalo and everything. They've got that little bit of chip on their shoulder, and I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo and if you're Rex Ryan, and now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last eight division titles, and they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they had Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates a, we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10, their second statement game of the year. Despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
Well, I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in three things: defense, defense, defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They had eight starters that were our former first or second round draft pick. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of a gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe, to an extent, a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost one regular season game last year. They've already lost two. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's a pretty lofty bar, you know, to win two games. So, oh, my gosh, you've doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, this keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportions. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example. You look at the game. Drew Brees feels like if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions. And that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out and you know, if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, is just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was a defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach and make sure your family gets getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today? Oh, hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, four touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
Better option, here's the difference. You had Brock, who was more physical than Peyton. Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most – the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had six starts. So physically and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after three games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid, the quantum leaps he's made from week one to week, you know, now heading into week four. I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett. Don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman. But does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy. But the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make them go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner than Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play. I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo's actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentz's and Dak Prescott's that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fish is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in. But as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose 3 or 4 in a row. But Goff's – I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run. But this is probably the best thing, because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe, but as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touch of the game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them, as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially as the season rolls on in a cold weather Green Bay.
Sean, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, it's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in it. A lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Brees is phenomenal. He is the franchise. But it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, they'll be lucky to win 6 or 7 games. And if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen. They're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it. Bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, when he is he's taken some hits, and that offensive line is not good. And he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? You know, and after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say, with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense, should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him, but he is really good at finding pockets to slide in, so I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team becomes that team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio, and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name's Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. And I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.